welcome to Two Modern Mystics with your co-hosts, Dawn Fleming and Linda Robach, who are here to offer you a deeper perspective of what is really going on and how you can disconnect from the chaos and plug into a higher consciousness.
Welcome to Two Modern Mystics. I am Dawn Fleming, and I'm so happy to have you listening in today. And I'm very excited about our topic, sacred sites and earth power points. Linda and I have visited many, many of these sites, and we have a lot to share with you today. So before we get into the topic, I want to introduce my co-host, Linda Robach. Linda is my good friend. She's an incredible light and mystic healer. And ever since I met Linda over 25 years ago, we've had many journeys together, teaching, leading retreats, taking workshops together, and traveling to some of the power places that we will talk about today. And I just want to say that Linda integrates the energy and experiences that she has had to help many people find and live their truth. So, hello, Linda.
Hello, and thank you, Dawn, my dear friend and fellow light traveler. I also want to say thank you for showing up in my life during this amazing time on our planet. And I want our listeners to know that this radio show is an example of your passion for helping others to remember their true nature and their oneness with all of creation. So what a blessing you are, not only to those of us who know you personally, but to the whole world.
Thank you.
As we're getting into today's topic, it's one that's dear to my heart, journey into sacred sites and earth power points. It's kind of interesting that we chose the preposition into as a word in our title for today's show. Kind of makes me realize how appropriate things are sometimes when we haven't even thought through them. But that into sacred sites and earth power points really describes the energy of how we approach and enter sacred sites. So if we really want to get the lessons and blessings from our visit to a sacred site or power point, we must first determine whether we are going to go as a tourist or a pilgrim. So what's the difference? According to Phil Cousineau, a pilgrimage is... And I just want to state these out. He wrote the book, The Art of Pilgrimage, and I took this information from that, from his work. But a pilgrimage, according to Phil, is a journey of risk and renewal. By definition, it is life-changing. It's a trip to a remote place to simply lose yourself, or a journey to a sacred place to find yourself. And as I pondered those, I was reflecting on my own experiences. And he also goes on and says that travelers cannot find deep meaning in their journey until they encounter what is truly sacred, what is worthy of our reverence, what evokes awe and wonder in the human heart, and what, when contemplated, transforms us utterly. So, a pilgrim visits a site to experience and share the energy of transformation, both personally and for the world. And a tourist travels for pleasure or to sightsee. So here's a protocol that I use as a pilgrim, and I know that this has helped me in having so many of the positive experiences that I've had. So just like to review them and share them with our listeners. So the first thing that I do is to set an intention for the visit. And after I do that, and sometimes these first two things go together, I take a moment of silence before approaching the site, and I tune in and ask permission of the spirits of the place to enter. And as soon as I feel peaceful with that, I enter and maintain an attitude of respect, attention, and alertness to the surroundings. And I realize that after I've had the experience there, that I know the energy of the place is now part of me, as I am part of it by simply being there. And then always a prayer of gratitude, thanks, after I visit. And I also include that before I visit as part of the intention. So those really help me maintain this attitude of reverence that allows the spiritual experiences to happen. So, Dawn, I would love for you to share with us qualities that make up sacred places. In other words, what makes a place a sacred site?
Well, thanks, Linda. Now, most of the sacred sites are power spots. You know, they're labeled this way for many reasons, and I'm going to go into those reasons. The site could be a place where the earth energy lines, sometimes called ley lines or Hartman lines, where they cross each other, and they create a vortex or a power spot, because the crossing of these lines brings more energy into that particular area and out of that area as well. And these areas that I've experienced are Sedona, Mount Shasta, the Grand Tetons, all had that vortex energy. And some of it has a Stargate energy, which we'll touch on later, but we'll get to on another episode. So other areas are considered sacred sites because the energy was built up over time in that particular spot from ceremonies or sacred activities that had occurred there. And many of these are built on top of these intersecting ley lines that I was talking about, because the architects, way back when they were doing it, were very much in touch with the earth and in touch with sacred energy and knew where to, you know, build these structures. So examples of this and many of the old churches. And when I went to Greece and Great Britain, I experienced a lot of this energy in these old churches. You figure they're built over power spots to begin with, and then a lot of prayer energy has gone into these sites for hundreds and maybe over 1,000 years, creating a sacred energy portal there. And when people enter these buildings and sit and meditate, they report physical and emotional healings. They see archangels or ascended beings in these churches. Or they may just have an unexplainable sense of peace when their life has been like in total chaos. Other places that I have not been to yet are considered very sacred sites are Mecca, which is in Saudi Arabia, where the Muslims go for their pilgrimage, Jerusalem, and Chartres Cathedral in France is also considered to be a very sacred space. So I want to touch on portals, which are places of unexplained heightened energy that people report different experiences, or actually going into different dimensions, or having expanded spiritual experiences when they're in these energy spots. And these portals could just be located just about anywhere. And for me, it just seems that I've stumbled across them when I'm out there hiking. All of a sudden, I just feel this difference when I cross through a particular area. I'll just say, ooh, this is a nice little portal. I think I'll sit here and meditate. For the Native Americans, many natural features are considered sacred, along with most mountain ranges. For me, I tend to gravitate to the mountain ranges and the waterfalls and look for the power spots. And I'll talk a little bit more about my mountain experiences later in the show. So some other natural features that are considered sacred are lakes, some land formations, forests, and caves, as well as the waterfalls that I just mentioned. Our next show, we will address Stargate vortexes, which are much bigger than the other vortexes that I talked about. And our guest speaker will be Allison Carter. She will explain these and give us a lot of great information about her experiences with them and how we can integrate the energy of the Stargate vortexes. So both Linda and I, we've had the opportunity to experience these larger vortexes, these Stargate vortexes, and have had incredible experiences. So sacred sites or power places can be man-made and used for sacred practices. They can be in nature where there is more energy that is alive, is pure and balanced, or a place that has been used for ceremonies. And it could be a place where many intersecting ley lines come together to create a vortex, a portal or a Stargate vortex. Or it could be a place that is sacred to an individual because of a personal experience that occurred in a specific spot. So we each may have places that we go to because of a memory of something that we had occur at a particular place. So, it's not always about the ley lines that are there. It could be something within us that we're drawn to that spot. And when Linda was sharing about how to prepare to go into those sites, I just want to say that, you know, a lot of people enter the sites and they want to take back rocks or stuff from the sites, but it's always important to go within and ask if it's okay to remove anything. And if you're in a foreign country and in some of the national parks here in the U.S., it's really against the law to be taking souvenirs. So really just maybe just taking the energy with you and the memory is enough instead of taking parts of the history with us. So I just wanted to say that for the enthusiastic pilgrims that are going to go out there and visit these sacred sites, I want you all to be able to come back and not be stuck in a country for wanting to take a rock. So, Linda, tell us why you travel to these places.
Well, why I travel to sacred sites, it's a little hard for me to express, but it usually starts with a yearning, kind of a longing that comes from deep within my being. And the best way that I can describe it is that I feel called. For instance, as soon as I hear about a certain area, I see a picture or a video or hear particular music, I have a knowing that I am to go there. And often synchronistic happenings occur, such as a book that someone talks about and shares that relates to the place that I'm thinking about, or a song that I hear as soon as I turn on the radio, or perhaps a call from a friend with a message. These are just examples that can trigger a deep yearning or memory within me. And when that happens, I can't ignore it until I commit to going to the area that is calling me. And it's almost that cannot be denied. So once I make that commitment and then do all of the logistical and practical things that need to be in place, which I have to do, I surrender after that. And then I absolutely know that there is a reason I am on this journey. And at the same time, I have to give up expectations of what I think is going to happen. And I become curious and fill my mind with thoughts such as, I wonder what Spirit has planned for me today. You know what that's like.
Yes.
And then I have to trust in the process and allow the how to show up differently than I think. And some of the things that look like they were just terrible or horrible incidences turn out to be the most amazing experiences in the long run when I look back. So then I have to open to whatever unfolds. When I come from this mindset, and that means that surrender and trust, the universe responds. and I have had life-changing, transformative experiences that I would never have believed possible. So all of that said, why I visit sacred sites and earth power points is to experience personal transformation and to participate in world transformation. So Dawn, would you tell us why you go to these places?
Thanks, Linda. I just loved everything you said. It's, you know, showing up when you're being called. And for me, I seek to visit these places because my soul will say, you know, it's time. It's all of a sudden I had this calling or yearning that there's a place you need to visit. And I'm not sure if it's for me or if it's that world work kind of calling. But like you said, you take care of the logistics and you show up. I love going to the mountains or to places where they are the power points. And I love going there because it allows me to find balance, to clear my chakras, and to open up spiritually to a deeper level. It helps me to get more grounding and expand my understanding. And both you and I, Linda, we're really busy. And so
yeah.
I think these personal pilgrimages, it's like a personal retreat. So it's like our soul calling us to, like, all right, you need to do something for you. And the timing is now. And so it's like we have to do it. It's like we have to go do it. So when I visit these places, I feel, like, renewed in spirit and that I can tap into that deeper knowing and possibilities of who we are and how infinite we really are. And like Linda had said, I go without expectation and surrender, because if you read all this stuff online about all these experiences other people are having and you're lining up in your mind that you have to have a particular experience, well, then that's what you're looking for while you're there, and you're not open to the real experience that's for you to have and can unfold. So I really just try to go there empty of expectation and just be in this energy. And this allows me to be present and awake to the experience, to experience the fullness of what that site has to offer for me. And I've had some very profound experiences that changed and charged me physically, emotionally, and mentally, along with opening me deeper to my true spiritual nature. So whether the shift when you go to these places is big or small, there is always some kind of transformation process that has been stirred and begins to occur not only during the visit, but after a visit to these sites. Mm-hmm. And I also intend that while I'm there, that I be a surrogate for the world, so that this energy that's coming through me, that I can send this love and healing energy outward to the world, as well as take it inward for my own transformation process. So what I know to be true is this incredible peace that I feel and experience when I visit these places. And the other thing that I just love is the purity of the energy, because, you know, when you live in communities and you're out in the world with all the chaos, when you go to one of these sacred sites, you feel the difference of that energy, of that purity, and it's just grace. It's just a pure blessing.
It's really indescribable.
Yes.
So, Dawn, I love what you shared about intending to be a surrogate for the world when we visit these power sites. When we have the opportunity to be conscious channels of receiving and sending healing love energy for the benefit of everyone and everything. I was recalling an experience I had in Bolivia in February of 2011, high in the Andean Mountains, about 40 miles from La Paz. I was visiting a spiritual retreat center with a large group of my Earthkeeper family, and a plant ceremony had been arranged for us that first night. The ceremony ended about midnight, But I was so charged and still having amazing otherworldly experiences, if you know what I mean. And I was not able to sleep. So I might have had an hour or two of sleep before breakfast. Later that afternoon, it was time for our group to return to La Paz. However, we were offered the chance to stay for another night to participate in a San Pedro long dance. I was really torn. Should I return to the hotel? I was exhausted. Or should I stay? And the decision was really weighing on me. And I was sitting with a friend on the veranda overlooking this beautiful scenery. Mountains were in that I could see, these beautiful, tall tips of snow-covered mountains. And I heard the Apu, which is the spirit of one of the mountains I was looking at, calling me to stay. And so I thought, it didn't leave me. And I was sitting next to my friend Randy, and I said to him, you know, I've asked for a sign that I can't ignore, whether I'm to stay here and participate in this all-night ceremony or not. And as we were sitting together in silence, all of a sudden, and seemingly from out of nowhere, two Andean condors started circling overhead, almost like they were making figure eights as they moved closer and closer to over my head. And Randy looked at me and said, I think you got your sign. And yes, I knew. Of course I did. And I stayed, questioning myself all the time. Like, why did I do that? Why? What's my point? It turned out that only four of us, out of about 90, remained to participate in the ceremonial long dance. Three women and a man. And I was the oldest. And I had this sinking feeling as the rest of the group left. You know, like, what was my motivation? What had I got into? I felt alone. I began to feel fear. The other three people I knew a little bit, not well. And I was feeling even more vulnerable when I found out that the San Pedro Long Dance was to be the culmination for students who had been in a long, month-long study with our shaman, Don Miguel. So the four of us rounded out a group of 30. The rest were his students. And we started the ceremony at sundown by sharing our intentions, which were written on banners, and we hung them on cords, almost like a clothesline, around a corral which had been constructed in an open area on the mountain. I remember that my intention was expansion of consciousness. And as we shared intentions, a sense of peace began to shadow my fear and become a little stronger, that sense of peace, that we were all there for similar reasons. We were all equally vulnerable. And the weather was rainy, and it was misty at this point and cold there high in the mountains. I was wearing every piece of clothing that I had packed, and it rained all night, but did not put out the fire that was kept blazing by Miguel, our shaman, and his assistants, and it did not affect the hauntingly beautiful music that was played and sung all night with instruments and voices, these instruments I had never seen or heard before. So we walked, and we walked, and we walked around the fire in a clockwise direction. Now, it's very interesting because by spiraling clockwise, we were digging deep to expose what needed to be released in our lives. And about midway through the dance, Miguel instructed us to walk in a counterclockwise direction. So when we began to spiral counterclockwise, we were moving upward to send and receive blessings of the universe. And our dance steps at that point were empowering our dreams for the future. And I can remember those steps were hard to take. Just kept moving and moving and thought, got to keep going, got to keep going. I was feeling alone and cold and wet and confused. And right outside the corral, we could walk out briefly, there was an altar that was set up in honor of the earth. And I spent some time out there, and I remember just kneeling down and in the dirt and the wet with my face and my forehead on the ground. And it was during that time that I had a moment of knowing, and that this sense of expansion came over me. There's no way that I can deny now that we are separate, or that we are not connected. We are all connected. We are not separate. We are one. And so this whole concept of oneness. So the term alone turned into a knowing that we are all one. And as the sky began to lighten, I realized that I'd made it through the night. And because the sky was overcast, I would not see the sunrise with my physical eyes, but I could feel it rising in my being. You know, I looked around and I made contact with the other three people from my group. And as we hugged, I felt an indescribable joy and love for everything, everything. I was transformed, and gratitude engulfed me. Even though the words that I could try to use can't express my experience. And this is part of visiting a site and being part of the earth and so forth. I can now relive it whenever I choose. So even planning for this show has brought it back high into my consciousness, and I feel it deep within my body. So that was a long story, but there's a lot more to it, and I won't go into it now. But Dawn, you've had several experiences. Could you tell us a little bit about the significance of the power places in Malta?
Sure. But Linda, I just wanted to share, as you were sharing with us of your experience of the long dance, I was just like feeling the energy of that. It was quite amazing. And I just cannot even imagine doing that long dance all night long under those conditions. But as you were sharing it, I was just feeling the energy around me opening and expanding. So thank you so much for sharing and offering that for us. So a few years ago, Bill and I decided we wanted to see Malta, and Christina Page was offering like a sacred tour. We just didn't want to go over there as visitors. We wanted to take a tour that was geared for our intention. And so we went with Christina Page and to go to all the different ancient energy portals in Malta. And for those of you who don't know where Malta is, it's a tiny island between Sicily and Tunisia, and it's packed with a lot of history because of where it's located. And it once housed the Knights Templars in the 1500s. However, the energy that we're experiencing from the sites that are there is over 2,000 years old. They really don't have an accurate number on how old they are because the country is mostly Catholic, and they don't want to go back before what the Catholics refer to as the beginning of time. But they were saying that the energy was from the B.C. time period. And most of the people who live on the island don't even acknowledge these sites as sacred sites. They're farmers, and they would just rather plow the sites over so they have more land to grow stuff. So the World Heritage Foundation had to come in and protect the sites, and so that people like us who know what they are can come visit them. So most of these ancient structures were made out of limestone, and most of the ones we visited were above ground, and they looked over the Mediterranean Sea. And we had a local tour guide who was really into the energy and understanding power spots and ley lines go with us to all the different power places in Malta, and was being able to explain to us that Malta is the main portal on the planet where the energy enters our planet and then moves through the Earth grid system to the rest of the planet. So being on this tiny island for about 9 days, we could constantly feel this surging energy from the ancient beings and from the different sites that we were visiting. Malta is also considered the birthplace of the ancient goddess feminine energy. And when the one museum we went to, they had these stone figures that were shaped like women. And they were calling the goddess. So we visited many of the sites, and we always set our intention before we went in, and were able to do meditation activities. What we found and what we were told when we visited the sites is that they were built based on sacred geometry. So these ancient sites, whoever built them, really were connected and understood sacred geometry. One of the main places on the island that we visited was called the Hypogeum. And this is a multi-storied underground labyrinth consisting of chambers, halls, corridors, and stairs, which over the centuries were extended deeper and deeper into the soft limestone. And they didn't even know it existed to the mid-1900s when they were starting to build like homes over the area, and when they broke ground, they found this structure. So the Hypogeum was both a sanctuary and a cemetery, and they found bones in there when they were going in and excavating it. The most impressive chamber, commonly called the Holy of Holies, has pillars that are just architecturally remarkable. And another chamber, the so-called auricular room, has a square niche cut into the wall that may have been used so that a priest's voice could echo around the temple. A mysterious quality of this particular room is that a man's voice will powerfully reverberate around the chamber. So as we entered, we had to go into this Hypogeum in really small groups, like groups of six. So our group of like 20 people got broken up into smaller groups. And usually their tour was very controlled, but we asked that when we got to that auricular room if we could do some chanting, and they did give us permission to do that. So as we entered the Hypogeum, you know, I could just feel the ancient energy holding, grounding, and just lifting me just all at once. And when we went into the auricular room, we spent time just chanting. And the collective vibrations of our group of six doing the chants, and we had two male voices with us, which just really was incredible with how it just moved through the whole, all the chambers. And it just lifted us, and just could feel that vibration moving through my entire body. And that was just great. The experience was wonderful. So when we experienced several of the other power places on Malta that were above ground, we were able to go in and to meditate as a group, do group ceremony for releasing and for rebirthing us. So we did a lot of wonderful ceremony, moved a lot of energy out and opened ourselves up. And I'll just say that, you know, it took several months when I returned just to integrate all the energy that unfolded for us on the trip.
Well, you know, that's an important point. When we go to these places, I know we need the time to integrate and to really fully accept all that we've been given. So, Dawn, I know that you really enjoy Mount Shasta. So, and you mentioned the mountains earlier. T- tell us what's so special about this place for you.
Well, thank you. I really do love Mount Shasta, and we're planning on returning there this summer. So what I just feel so drawn to there. It's just such pure energy. I guess about 15 years ago, a friend told me about Mount Shasta, and I started like doing some research on it and was just really kept feeling pulled there. And Mount Shasta is in Northern California. The air, the water, the earth energy there, it is so pure. I think as pure as you're going to get on this planet. And Bill and I went there, and we stayed in the small town of Mount Shasta. And each day, we filled our water bottles at the base of the mountain where the Sacramento River comes out of the mountain for the first time. And we would drive up further on the mountain and go for a hike. And I would find a place just to meditate and, you know, work with intention. And Bill would kind of go amuse himself somewhere and then come back and find me when I was done. Mount Shasta is known as the earth home of the Ascended Master Saint Germain, who is here on the seventh ray of service to humanity. And you could definitely feel Saint Germain's energy there. Mount Shasta is also known for the Lemurian energy being present. And Telos, T-E-L-O-S, is the Lemurian city, a physical city of immortals that exists within Mount Shasta. And at times, I could see and sense these Lemurian beings, not only on the mountain, but in the town at the base of the mountain. You would see the Lemurian energies going by. And I just described the energy at Mount Shasta is cosmic, and not of this earth energy plane. And you've been there yourself, Linda, and experienced it. When I would meditate on the mountain, I could just feel that purity just pulsing through my whole being. And I would just go deep, deep into my heart center and experience my oneness with all. And with doing that, I could just go into that place where I'd become a speck and just one with everything on this plane and on all realms of consciousness. So it was truly healing on just so many levels. And, you know, in our day-to-day, we just get so attached to how we want things to be, on how our expectations. And by just going on this pilgrimage, on this journey, and connecting in with this energy, it's just a reminder of the truth and our connection to Source. And it just puts things back into perspective for us. And I just think that's probably one of the reasons our soul wants to go on these sacred journeys. So when I tuned into the cosmic vibration there, just my mind and heart were just so opened and just realigning me in the truth, and all that other stuff just kind of melts away. And I just say I love Mount Shasta, and very similar energy I find at the Grand Tetons in Wyoming, and that's more like at the Jenny Lake area. And this area is a sacred ceremony place for the Shoshone Native Americans and home to the Great White Brotherhood Council, which is a group of ascended masters working for the ascension of humanity. And I will have to share more about that information about the Grand Teton experiences on another show. But what we need to remember is to make time after these journeys, like we were just saying, for integrating these new energies. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, when they go, they put in their vacation leave, and the day after they come back, they go right back to work. And I think it's just as important to leave time for when you return a couple days just to integrate the experience and to allow the energy to bless you and integrate. It just makes returning to work so much easier. So
that's true. And wise words. And Dawn, that brings us to announcements. So what do you have coming up that you'd like to share with our listeners now?
Okay. I've been chosen to be a presenter at a televideo conference, and the theme for this conference is Your Best Year Yet, and it will be available online June 8th. And I'm going to be doing a presentation on being empowered through your chakras. And there's going to be, I think, 25 or more presenters who will be who are videoed and will be offering different perspectives on how you can have your best year yet. And each of these presenters is going to be offering a free giveaway as well. So you not only have the opportunity to listen to all these different perspectives, you then are gifted with something from them as well. And you can start signing up for it the end of May. And the website is www.yourbestyearyetlive.com. And so right now I'm thinking that's all the announcements I have. If you want to check out any classes that I have coming up, you can go to my website at energytransformations.org. And Linda, what is your website?
Well, at this point, I'm not going to even mention that because I don't have anything that's going to be coming up in June or even July that I'm going to be involved with a lot of family and travel, but no announcements. So I'd like to close by saying that a pilgrimage to a sacred site helps us to connect more deeply with spirit. It helps us gain greater insights into our purpose in life, you know, what to do and how to be. And it also helps us to enhance connections with our earth, with others. It helps us build community. And what I have felt in our time together today, that is a theme. It also gives us a sense of oneness. So,
yes,
to connect more deeply with spirit, to gain greater insights into our purpose, to enhance connections and build community, and to gain this sense and knowing of oneness, that we are one. So thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening and sharing, and we appreciate all the energy that our listeners are sharing with us. Namaste.
Namaste.